Welcome to today's episode. Welcome to the Let's Get It podcast. I am not Justin Spaulding. Again, I am Joel Wallace. Justin is out on another project right now, so I'm kind of filling in. I've got a good friend and a guy that I've known for a couple of years. He's actually was roommates with my brother in New York.
Yeah.
Corey. So great to have you on. How's it going, my friend?
Dude, I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me, man.
No, that's I'm so glad you were able to make it super short notice. I literally messaged him yesterday and he's like, yeah, dude, let's jump on. Let's do it.
Yeah.
So Corey, give us a little bit of a background. Obviously, again, we kind of talk about success principles. What does it take to be a high achiever in your industry? We've had a lot of real estate people on. We've had CEOs of Murphy Door. We've had CEO of Bucked Up, the energy drink company. We've had different business professionals, several professional athletes. So obviously, you're our first media tycoon.
Yeah. Listen, I'm the CEO of Jococo, okay?
That's right.
All right.
Winning.
My LLC is called the Jococo.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And whenever I talk to like an accountant or my business manager, they're always like, the Jococo. And I'm like, it's Jococo. It's very easy. It's really not that complicated. But yeah, man. So you know what? Technically, I am the CEO of something.
That is fair.
But yeah, man. So as you know, but for your listeners, I am an actor. I have done TV and film and Broadway and off Broadway and regional gigs and readings and workshops of new shows that make it to Broadway that never see the light of day, or you know, kind of the full spectrum of the treatment of being an actor. I've had great success. I've had great disappointment. And so I'm excited to talk about the whole scope of that with you, man, because I think that a lot of the time in theater and TV and film, just as an actor, a lot of people see the triumphs and they're like, oh man, this guy, you know, like I'm sure you've heard it a million times where it's the overnight success of it all, but you don't see the hours in the gym. You don't see the hour, you know, like all of the work that's put in. You don't see the hundreds or thousands of no's that you receive just to get that one yes that makes everyone go, wow, this guy's great. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, it seems like everybody's overnight success took several years.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, that's the biggest thing for me, that like I really pride myself on the work.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So take me back, way back, high school. When was that kind of that first initial spark of entertainment that you were interested in, wanted to pursue something in the entertainment space? Was it always theater? Was it always film? Like what was that journey like?
It started with theater. Look, dude, I mean, at the end of the day, I was always a ham. I was always like, all eyes on me, baby. Yeah. I remember being a kid and my parents would watch American Idol with my brothers and I. And during the commercial breaks, my mom and dad would be like, all right, boys, get up. And we would sing a song and my mom would be Paula. My dad would be Simon and they would like judge us and stuff. And so that was like kind of how it started. But then from there, it kind of like turned into, you know, like I did my fifth grade talent show. And with that, I was like, this is fun. You know, I did my fifth grade talent show, and on the little like the note card that basically they have you write out a couple of questions, you know, what grade are you in? What are you singing? Why did you want to do this and all that sort of stuff? And on my answer for why I did this, it was, I really enjoy singing and I want to see if people enjoy listening to me sing.
Yeah.
And so I sang Sugar Pie Honey Bunch. And it's funny, you watch the video and I do this like little spin in the middle of it. And the crowd goes crazy, Joel. Man, like I'm still chasing that applause.
Right.
And from that moment on, I was like, this is cool, man.
Yeah.
And so then I started doing theater. After that, I did like The Jungle Book Jr. And I played Baloo the Bear, as you do. And then from then on, it was really a hobby. It was something that I loved to do. And I was doing it every chance I got, you know, like I used my bar mitzvah money to take, you know, acting classes and dance classes and stuff. And I started doing it like as much as I could. I was doing my high school shows while also doing my community theater shows.
Yeah.
And so like most of my time was spent doing that. The community theater that I did shows at was like a 10-minute walk from my high school. So I, even when I wasn't doing shows at school, I would walk to the theater and go to the practice rooms and play piano and, you know, work on my chops that way. I would start studying scenes and all that. Then my junior year, I had a bunch of friends that were older than me that started going to college for theater. And I was like, wait, what? You can go to school for this? That's crazy. And you're going to these like huge, you know, like top five musical theater schools, Carnegie Mellon and, you know, yeah. University of Michigan, Juilliard and all that sort of stuff. And I'm hearing that, you know, people are getting scholarships. And, you know, I didn't care about the rest of my schooling. You know, unfortunately, as silly as it seems, I knew what I wanted to do. So I'm sitting in, you know, geography, like, okay, like, no offense, Miss Nelson, but I don't want to be here.
Right.
And so, so that seemed like my in, because, you know, my grades were fine, but they weren't getting me into one of these top schools that would look good to having a diploma from. And so that was my in. And I applied to like five or six schools. I got into two of them. And then I started going to school for it. And then while I was in school, the thing that really made me go, I could do this, was Charles Franklin, a dear friend of Joel's brother and I. His name's Charlie Franklin, as his equity name. And he booked the Book of Mormon national tour. And then he said no, because he wanted to be in New York. And so he got Bridges of Madison County on Broadway. And then he did Book of Mormon on Broadway. And once he got his first Broadway credit, I always describe it like a video game, where it's like you and I, Joel, we're playing a video game, and I get to level two. And so now that I'm on level two, you get to play on level two also.
Sure.
And
sure.
So as soon as Charles booked his Broadway show, I go, ooh, I can do that now.
Right.
Sweet. All right, cool. Now that he's unlocked that level, now I just have to get through my first level and then get to that level. And then sure enough, that's how it's kind of rolled out. And then as I've gotten further into my career, I've started unlocking levels for people. You know, I got TV credits and a series regular and a movie. And I'm like, okay, cool. I'm collecting things that now I get to go, hey guys, play on these levels now. Just inspiring each other and surrounding yourself with like-minded people who work hard at an industry that is really, really difficult and encourages you to leave at every corner. But, you know, it sounds crazy and might not be the healthiest way of looking at it, but I describe it like gambling, where it's like you stay at the table long enough, you're gonna win at once.
Right. Right. That's awesome. So what kind of, so obviously, and this has been very, very true with a lot of people that we've talked to, where it's, you knew early on and it was, nothing was going to distract you from that goal. You know, it's very similar to like a college athlete. They're not going to college because they want that degree necessarily. Most of them are kind of on that level of knowing, I'm going to play at college because it's my gateway to the pros and to that next level of where I can make this a career and I can turn this into kind of my life.
Mm-hmm.
So through that process, obviously, I'm assuming you've had a lot of people that you knew, a lot of friendships, a lot of other people that were kind of on that same trajectory as you were for a long time that slowly just didn't stick or yeah. didn't stick around long enough. Or what was that like? I guess was for you, was there ever a struggle with other people kind of falling on the wayside or kind of, I don't want to say giving up on their dream, but you know, like just going, yeah, you know what, the sacrifice to achieve that level of success in this industry is just not really what I'm willing to put in anymore and kind of get distracted into something else.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because in this line of work, the stability is a thing that you have to, or the lack thereof, I suppose, is something you have to get used to. You could have the best year of your life. You book something that gets you $500,000. Mm-hmm. And then the next year you get nothing. And then the year after that, you get a few gigs that, you know, pull in a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and then nothing.
Yeah.
And so I think that is the thing that, and so, you know, the older that I get, the less that I judge, you know, and now I've gotten to the point where I don't judge it at all. In fact, when I hear people going, I think I'm going to bow out, there's a part of me, there is definitely a side of my brain that goes, good for you. Because I know the joy that I have some friends who have left the industry that are so much happier, man.
Yeah.
because I'm not going to lie to you. This shit gets tough. You know, there's nothing cute about getting older and wanting to have a stable lifestyle and realizing, well, no, I can't, since I'm doing an off-Broadway show right now. Mm-hmm. That an off-Broadway is great and the show is phenomenal and I love being a part of it. But off-Broadway, you know, barely pays the bills. No one does off-Broadway to get rich. You do it because you enjoy the piece that you're working on. And so I'm doing that right now. And this summer, I had to say no to a lot of life. You know, like, for instance, my parents went on a cruise to Greece that they took our entire family. And I had to say no. One of my dear, dear friends, John, got married in California.
Yeah, yeah, just, yep.
Yeah, I couldn't go to his wedding. My girlfriend's family went to Jamaica. I couldn't go to that. You know, they're just like these life moments that I had to really go, all right, will I be happy doing this show and saying no to these huge life events? And those are the sacrifices that they don't talk about in school.
Yeah.
Those are the sacrifices that the, you know, the little kid that was in his fifth grade talent show saying, I want to see if people like hearing me sing, didn't. I had no clue that these were the real sacrifices. Sure. You know, the sacrifice of having to tighten your belt every once in a while when jobs aren't flowing in, that's a sacrifice, but that's not the real sacrifice, in my opinion. The real sacrifice is the life stuff, saying no to trips, saying no to birthdays, missing weddings, missing funerals, missing, you know, huge life events. And then years later going, well, I did this show. And right. To some people, that sounds crazy. To some people, they go, you miss a funeral to do to play dress up with your friends?
Right. Right.
For me, it's so much more than that. It's the only thing that gets me out of bed, man. It's the only thing that I love more than anything in this life is telling stories and getting to portray the human experience and getting to show people aspects and corners of life that they may not normally see. And being a part of that is so extraordinarily special. It's worth sacrificing those things. And it definitely takes some mental gymnastics to remind yourself you're doing the right thing, or, you know, it's worth it, or all of those. It's worth staying at the table, as I was saying before. But when it's worth it, it's worth it.
Yeah. And that's interesting because, like, you tapped on something where, excuse me, I feel like you're in one of the unique situations and career paths where your gratification doesn't come from the accumulation of wealth, or doesn't come with the intent of I'm doing this to be successful.
Sure.
The gratification or the fulfillment of what you do stems from that 2.5 hours on stage in front of the crowd, interacting with someone, knowing this is the first and probably last time that they may see this show. This is their first experience. Doesn't matter if you're sick, doesn't matter if you're not feeling the best, doesn't matter. Like you have to level up your performance on a nightly basis and get into a headspace where it doesn't become just routine and just a job and just a chore, to where, you know, again, as a performer, like, I got to give this audience my best because they paid money to be here.
Yeah. There's a great, I guess, philosophy in the theater or a school of thinking, I suppose, that is it's always one in that audience. It's always one person's first show and one person's last show. You don't know if there's a kid who's never seen theater or an adult who's never been to the theater. And you also don't know if there's someone who, you know, comes to see the show and, God forbid, you know, drops dead the next day or gets into a car accident on their way home. You know, you have no clue. So do it. Just do the thing, you know. And what you were saying before, where it's the line of work that there's a gratification from the doing rather than what you're receiving. It's just a different part of the ego, in my opinion. You know, I'm sure they're very successful real estate agents that you've had on the show, as you were saying, where they could sell a multi-million dollar condo and they make a real nice chunk of that. And that part of the ego where you're like, I made this much money today. And I've been there. You know, I've had jobs that pay really well. And there is a really satisfying itch that is scratched from that, where you go, I'm making this much money, dude. Are you kidding me? There's definitely that. But then there's another, and it's a much longer lasting scratch, which is doing something that's challenging, doing something that scares the shit out of you. You know, I'm working mm-hmm. on a show right now where it's an actor musician show. So we are the band. So, and that, look, I play guitar, but I didn't play guitar to this level.
Yeah.
And I had to really up my chops, and doing that, and now being on the other end and just sitting in it and like jamming with this band feels so good and makes me go, I'm doing that thing now. That is so fulfilling in a way that a paycheck could never scratch. Now, the scratch is...
the itch is still itching.
Still itch. I got really, really big eczema with that scratch. But I, you know, like with this, it's a different part of the ego that is fulfilled. You know, I've been saying a lot lately because I've been doing a lot of these jobs where, you know, you're so fulfilled artistically, but your wallet's, you know, a little yeah. lighter. And I've been saying a lot lately where people are, you know, because people are coming to see this show and saying like, this is my favorite thing I've seen you in. And, you know, I've been in beautiful on Broadway. I've been in Jersey plays, like classic shows. You know, I just did The Great Gatsby that Florence Welch wrote the music for, you know, like really artistically fulfilling projects. Mm-hmm. And this one, which is a 90-minute, you know, actor-musician show that we're doing downtown in the Village, friends are coming and they're like, this is my favorite thing. And I'm like, dang. I'm like, well, that's what I want to do. I'm like, I want to do shows that, like, people are like, I love this. And then there's always the caveat that I'm like, but I also want to make a lot of money.
Right, right.
But wouldn't that be hilarious if I could do this and also make millions of dollars?
Right, right. Anybody out there listening right now?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But you know, those jobs will come. It's just about being patient and keeping yourself occupied, you know, in the meantime, whether it be, you know, writing something or whether it be taking classes or, you know, getting a day job that you actually don't hate, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
And I think to go back to your question before about people leaving the industry, that is why I don't judge people anymore, because now that I've gotten Now that I've done jobs outside of theater and TV and film,
mm-hmm.
pay the bills that I haven't hated, that I'm like, yeah, look, I'm making a consistent paycheck. This is kind of nice. That comfort is intoxicating.
Yeah. Yeah. That security. You don't have to worry about the next job necessarily.
Yeah. You go, you know what?
Hmm.
And it's the moment when that intoxication overpowers any artistic fulfillment you felt, then you get your answer. You're like, wait, then why am I gonna bend over backwards for an industry that doesn't really care about me?
Right.
You know?
Right. And I know it's so easy to look at anyone on screen or on stage and on film and kind of have that mindset of, oh man, you've got it made. Like, oh, you have a reoccurring role on a great show that's been pounding out numbers, that's got spinoff after spinoff after spinoff.
Yeah.
Like, holy cow, that's, dude, you are set. Like, you are solid for right now.
Well, that's the thing. You know, it's funny. Having worked on, you know, like with Power, working on for four seasons and working on a CW show, you know, I'm in New York, I'm doing theater, I'm auditioning for theater all the time. And the amount of time that casting directors or directors or even friends, I'll bump into them on the street and they're like, are you in New York for good now? And I'm like, what do you mean? They're like, well, aren't you like in LA filming? And I'm like, no, I film all my shit here. And on top of that, like the CW show is done.
Right.
And now like as of a year ago, Power's done also. And like, oh, I didn't know that. And it's like, well, yeah, because all you're doing is watching social media and seeing, you know, someone tagging me in an episode of Power and I repost it. So they're like, well, it still must be running. And I'm like, that's from season one, which happened 6 years ago, you know, and that, you know, that goes into a whole other conversation of social media and all that, you know, that side of the industry where you have to build a following and you have to stay consistent and be posting and how much I can't stand social media. And it drives me nuts that it is actually a thing that you have to consider, you know?
Yeah. Now, so tap on that a little bit. Cause like the industry now compared to what it was even 20 years ago, even 10 years ago, to be honest, with it being so social media driven and kind of like your followers have an impact. The amount of following has an impact on your, your opportunity to get roles. And it can start to now all of a sudden it's like, oh, you have this kind of a following. Well, you know, I'm going to take that into consideration because I'm essentially now hiring a target market that's coming with the actor that's already giving me an audience. So you've kind of got a baked in return right out of the gate if I hire this person versus this person. Even though this person maybe is a little bit better for the role, there now there's a different business strategy to the game that I feel like just changes the dynamic. How does that affect you and like your mentality since from kind of when you maybe started on your live shows and really started to gain traction on stage compared to shifting into some TV stuff?
Yeah.
Like how do you, from a business standpoint, how do you approach personal branding and how it affects and influences your opportunities down the road?
Yeah. Here, wait one sec.
Yeah, you're good, man.
Have a good day at work. There we go. Yeah. We got the lights.
We got it in. We got it in.
And so, so I would say with that, something that I've realized is, you know, unfortunately, social media is a part of casting now, and it can be. There. I'm not saying it's across the board. There are some studios and some producers and some teams that are like, I don't care. I just want to cast the best person. But you oftentimes hear stories. There, I saw something recently. Ethan Hawke's daughter was talking about how she will sign on for a film and the director will be like, we really need you to up your social media game because we have a target social media audience of, just for purpose of conversation, of 1 million people. Joel, if you have 25,000 followers and I've got 25,000 and, you know, Ethan Hawke's daughter has 25,000, that's only 75,000 followers between three of the principal cast.
Sure.
Now, if their goal is 1 million, they are having to hire someone who has more than 900,000 followers, which then just narrows the pool.
Right.
Whereas if they could hire, you know, four people with 250,000 followers, could, you know, you can maybe hire an unknown person. Or if you hire one person with 1 million followers, then you can hire four unknown actors to fill out your principal cast. And so there's that, which is, you know, some lore in our industry that is terrifying because you sit there going, how the hell do you build that big of a following? You kind of can't plan on building that. That's one of those algorithms that you can't figure out.
It becomes a full-time job in and of itself.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
You know, you look at Micah.
Exactly.
I mean, literally, he had to dedicate his life to building social media and a social media presence. Like, that's a full-time job.
Micah, I have a buddy, Carl, who the discipline that goes into it is something that I think goes so overlooked when it comes to social media because you see the brand ambassador and you see the free stuff they get and the invites to the parties and to the dinners and the shows and the premieres. And you're like, this shit seems so easy. But dude, I'll tell you what, you try it for a second and it requires such an ego death.
Oh, yeah.
It requires such a lot. I think that a lot of people look at social media people going, they're the worst. You're filming yourself all the time. You're so full of yourself. I think it's the complete opposite. It's you going, because, dude, for instance, the show that I'm doing off Broadway right now, we had to do like this, like social media push, where we filmed videos of ourselves going, you know, I'm Corey Giacomo, I'm playing the role of Ferris, come see our show. And then you play a song and, you know, you send that out and they trim it and make it look nice. I did maybe 40 takes of this one video of me introducing myself and playing a song because I could not stop cringing at myself.
Yeah.
And social media people will take their phone out and they'll go, what's up, guys? Blah, blah, blah. Come see this. And they'll put their phone down and not even think it. They won't even watch it. They'll just trim it and then post it. I think that requires such a strong sense of like, whatever. I don't care.
Right.
No,
right.
A flippancy with putting your stuff out there that I think is a skill that it goes very overlooked in the consumer market of going, man, how do you do that?
Yeah.
But sorry.
No, you're good.
To go back with social media, I think realizing that it is a part of the industry and realizing what kind of actor you want to be, you know, because do you want to build a following that will then dictate the market that you go into?
Sure.
For instance, if I have friends who do social media that will, that are like hilarious, that post funny videos all the time, but that could also pigeonhole you. And that you can't show your dramatic side until you've established yourself in a comedic realm, you know, and vice versa, where it's, you know, I have friends who have done shows where they've built a following that is so specific that then they want to do other shows, but the show goes, well, that's not, you know, that's not specific to our style, you know, you do a crime drama, for instance.
Sure.
You do a crime drama where you're toting guns and selling drugs and all that stuff. And then I audition for, you know, some like children TV show.
Yeah.
That would, you know, let's just say Blue's Clues, you know, for an example. They're going to look at my following and they're going to go, well, not exactly the target audience here.
Yeah.
People who are watching crime dramas versus people who are watching kids shows.
Right.
And so that consideration, and so it all has to be strategic. You know, you have to be strategic in the way you market yourself. You have to be strategic in the projects that you take. The projects that you take also say something. You know, are you going to be a leading man? Are you going to be a supporting character? Are you going to be ensemble? Are you going to be, you know, the bad guy? Because how often do you see someone in a movie that you're like, oh, this guy's a bad guy in everything? But do you see that guy who plays the bad guy and everything doing a rom-com where he's the romantic love interest? Usually not.
Right.
And that's what's so respectable about, you know, one of my favorite actors, Matthew McConaughey, where he goes, he took a step back from acting and said, I want to reestablish myself as a dramatic actor. He was getting offered million-dollar contracts to be the romantic lead of these movies. And eventually he said, I'm going to say no. And he said, no. And then eventually Dallas Buyers Club came along and won him an Oscar because he knew the avenue he wanted to go down and he wasn't going to be deterred from that, you know. And now, granted, he was around during a time that social media wasn't so prevalent, but I think that the cream rises to the top, right?
Sure.
If you're good, you're good. You're going to work. I have friends who aren't on social media at all who have great success. So it really is, you know, sometimes I wonder, you know, and I'm not too proud to admit, sometimes I wonder if it's just an excuse that I give myself occasionally where I go, because I don't have a million followers, I'm not on a TV show. When in reality, it's just because I wasn't right for the project.
Sure. Yeah.
I also think that is a huge aspect of the industry that's important is going, you know what? That one's not for me, and that's okay.
Yeah. What kind of a mindset do you feel like it takes for anyone to be able to stick it out through just how up and down that industry is to be able to stick with it long enough to, like you said, to finally really, if you stay long enough, and I mean, you have to have a talent.
Yeah.
Like you can say, oh, if you stay long enough, well, if you suck, you suck. Well, you could be there for 20, 30, 40, 50 years. You're terrible. I'm sorry. You're tone deaf. Sucks to be you. You know, like you're just, it's not going to work. But
exactly.
So obviously there has to be a raw talent, but from a mentality, like it can get brutal. And I would imagine even the waves of possible depression going from a really high, dude, I killed it on the, you know, on Power.
Yeah.
Had a great role, had a great whatever. And then now it's like, I don't have a job. But I need something. Like, is there, what kind of self-doubt do you fight through? Like, what do you have to kind of work through mentality-wise to kind of work through that?
Yeah. I mean, I'd be lying to you if I said that I haven't had heavy bouts of depression.
Sure.
You know, anxiety, depression, all that stuff where, and you feel crazy sometimes, man.
Yeah.
Where you're on top of the world. Oh my God, I'm untouchable. And then the next minute you're like, I'll never work again. You know, mm-hmm. And that wave is, it's disorienting and it's debilitating. But I think at the end of the day, if you're in it for the right reasons, you'll never want to walk away. You know, if you're in it for the right reasons, if you're in it to get rich, that's not the right reason, because you're going to find out real quick that getting rich in this business is a rarity.
Yeah.
some people get lucky and some people make consistent careers out of it, you know, where you're living comfortably. And that should be the goal.
Sure.
Getting rich in it, you know, that's few and far to come by.
Right.
Whereas with just having a consistent career where you go, I want to build a big enough career in the beginning so that it can carry me through my 60s, 70s, so yeah. that I can retire knowing that I built a wide breadth of a career and did what I love to do. So I think if you're in it for the right reasons, which for me personally, I would rank the right reasons are for wanting to make change in the world, because with art, you can do that. You can really change people's minds. You can tell stories that are challenging, that are uncomfortable, that make people question things, that make people ask themselves, you know, what they genuinely believe in. I think that's the primary reason to stay in it. Also, it's fun. If you're having yeah. fun with it, nothing beats it. You know, I think that a lot of the time the fun gets lost because you want to build a career, or you want it to be good, or you want it to be, you know, you want people to be impressed, you know, the ego part of it. If you are just having fun, nothing else matters. And also majority of the time, if you're having fun with it, the audience is having the best time. You know, that's why shows like Jersey Boys or Mamma Mia exist.
Right.
Because if the cast is having fun on stage, the audience is having a good time.
Yeah.
You could be giving a totally fine performance, nothing mind blowing. If you're having a blast, that crowd is going to be like, we love it. So having fun. Also, you know, like the stories that you're wanting to be a part of, you know, and I guess that ties into the reason number one.
Sure.
Just wanting to be a part of stories that need to be told, you know, whether it be about sexuality or whether it be about race or whether it be about, you know, something that's deeply personal to you, you know, like if you want to tell a story about loving yourself or about self-forgiveness, or, you know, if you want to, or do the opposite, you know, show a story about someone who really struggles with depression and, you know, and showing that the darker sides of that so that people can feel a little less alone.
Yeah.
It's the reason to stay in it. And that's why I think it's really important not to get into an industry just because you want to make money, unless, you know, with real estate or with, you know, being the CEO of a company. That's a great reason to get into it, going, all right, I'm going to make a lot of money on this and I know how right. to sell it.
Right.
With theater and acting in general, you want to get into it because you like telling stories. And I know that that sounds so cliche and so cheesy, but you got to like telling stories. Yeah. You know, you got to be a storyteller. And I think that that's what keeps the world moving. You know, sure, the literal sense, you know, money and all that. But I think that without stories, what's the point? You know, it's what you do, you know, right. in a way. You're telling stories on your podcast. You're having people come on and telling stories about their lives, and good storytellers you want to listen to.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah. And I think you're absolutely right. I know we're tapping at about 5 minutes and you got to get rolling here. But one thing I wanted to hit on from kind of maybe a business side of things is, what are you doing if you are, what kind of steps are you doing when you do have the high successes or the big wins? Like, what steps are you taking to kind of put that money to work?
Yeah.
Invest that into XYZ opportunity that's going to cash flow kind of on the back end. Like, how are you building your portfolio in other ways outside of just acting that will allow you a little bit more of a passive? I hate that phrase, passive income, because nothing is a passive income. It all takes work at the end of the day. But
of course, but also I love passive income.
Right.
So, I mean, the easiest ways are that in our unions, there are pensions that you can be a part of, you know, that
okay.
like you can put a percentage of your paycheck into it. And a lot of the time, these producers will match it to a certain percentage so that it can
interesting.
Build, so it can build a little bit faster and a little bit bigger, obviously.
Yeah.
And so that's one way. Also, if, you know, if you're making really good money, you can invest it, obviously, you know, whether yeah. that's in stocks, you can buy a house, you can, you know, a couple of years ago when I was on a big TV show and I was making really good money and I bought one of those, they're not new anymore, but when I bought it, it was brand new. It was the Mustang Mach-E,
oh, yeah.
the electric Mustang. Yep. Yep. So I bought that, and it happened to coincide with the pandemic, where I don't know if you remember during the pandemic, there was like a battery shortage.
Yeah, you bet.
And so I bought this car, and I was supposed to get it like the next month. Didn't get it for 3 or 4 months. And then I finally got it. And by that point, I had been done filming the show. I had moved from Chicago back to Florida. So they had to ship the car to Florida.
Oh, my God.
So I'm driving this car around. I got a few speeding tickets because that thing whips. And so then the industry started picking back up in New York. And so I moved back to New York and I left my car in Florida. When I'm in New York and I'm going, you know what? I need to be here. And then I go, well, I'm not going to bring that car to New York. The public transit, I'll never drive it. It's a brand new car. I'll ding it up in New York. And if I do drive it, I'll probably get a few more speeding tickets.
Right. Right.
And so I said, you know what? I'm going to sell this thing. Like I said, it coincided with the battery shortage. And so because I was selling it at the time that I did, I made a huge profit on it. And so it's something like that where you buy things. And that was a mistake. Like that just lined up perfectly. Like it was a happy accident where like I just bought it at the right time. And then life moved me to a place where I was selling it at the right time.
Yeah.
And so, you know, something like that where you buy assets that you can sell off, or you buy property that you can flip.
Sure.
You know, you can also start producing. You know, that's a huge way that people start making money in our industry, is by producing projects. Or if you have a friend that, you know, is writing a project that you're making good money on your thing, and you go, you know what, I want to put my finger in your pot and we can make something together. And then that's where you really start build
a
portfolio in the industry, so that you can then really consider yourself a multifaceted, all that. You know, I have a lot of friends who will just go co-pro in a Broadway show, you know, where you put $15,000 to $20,000 into a show, and then you're a producer on it.
Interesting.
You know, and so, and you kind of just like dump the money in and then walk away. And then the show wins a Tony Award and suddenly you're a Tony winning producer.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. And so.
So in a situation like that, does that give you kickbacks on a monthly basis based on how profitable the show is? Or like, how does the actual cash flow side of that work?
So that'll kick back once the show recoups.
Okay.
So once the initial investment is paid off, then you start making your money back in, you know, smaller increments. But eventually, hopefully, if the show does well enough, everyone makes their money back and then starts making money.
Got it.
And a lot of the time that is really influenced by whether or not the show tours.
Sure.
You know, if the show is on Broadway and does well, lately, not a lot of shows are recouping their initial investment on Broadway. They'll go on the road afterward, and that's where you'll start seeing the profit. You know,
interesting.
Out. Yeah.
That's super interesting.
Yeah, man.
Corey, I appreciate your time. Where can people find you? What do you got coming up next? Where can they find you, either on the road or at a show in New York?
Yeah. You can find me on social media across the board at Coco Jacoco. COCOJEACOCO. And besides that, I'm doing a show till the end of July. We might get extended into August at a theater called Theater 154 in the West Village in New York City, right off Christopher Street. We're doing a show called Bo. It's a musical all about self-love and acceptance. It's a queer story. And we play the music the entire time, and we're jamming on stage, and it's a lot of fun. And then on top of that, I'll be doing Jersey Boys in St. Louis, Missouri.
Yes, sir.
In August, I don't know exactly the dates of that run, but it's like a week-long run. We're there for like 3 weeks. We rehearse for 2 weeks. We run for a week, in and out quick. But that theater, it's a 12,000-seat amphitheater.
That's crazy.
I can't wait, man.
Yeah, that's going to be fun.
And then I'm going to be working on a horror film, a slasher thriller.
Really?
We'll be filming throughout July, called Megan is a Good Girl. I'll be playing a detective in that one. And so that one's going to be a lot of fun to work on. And I've got a show that's going to be coming out, I want to say, in late August, that I can't announce just yet, but I do a recur on a popular whodunit show on Hulu. I'll leave it at that. And
may or may not be filmed in New York.
Yeah, may or may not be filmed in New York, right. May or may not have a very famous young actress and
yes.
older comedic legends.
Yes.
Legends that were riots to work with on stage. Man. So may or may not be in that.
Yeah, it could. It's a possibility.
And so I'll be announcing that soon. And what else? I feel like there's a million other things.
Yeah.
I'm writing stuff. And
awesome.
Yeah, man. Just trying to stay busy in this industry that I love so much and make $1 million.
That's right. And then invest that million so that it makes billions.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's awesome. Brother, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much. Thank you guys for hanging out and listening. As always, subscribe, check us out. We've got a whole docket of episodes just kind of covering success principles, and can't wait to chat with you here in a little bit and see what you got coming this summer.
Yeah, brother.
All right, man. Have a good one, brother.
Thank you, man.
All right. Bye.